call the meeting to order. I would ask for an approval of the agenda.
So moved.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Certification of executive session of July 10th.
I move the board executive committee certify to the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting that at the July 10th meeting of the executive session of the board executive committee, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive session under board bylaws article 10 and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive session was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the board executive committee.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Information item? Oh, approval of minutes, June 26th.
Move approval, Mr. Chair.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Information item, quarterly meeting with Access Advisory Committee leadership. Ready, fire, aim.
Okay. Let me start off with Phil. Wanted to talk to you a little bit about where we're going with our bylaws. And I would like to know if there's any updates that we have concerning the regional project and any, if you have any other thoughts with respect to that.
Yeah, I had a couple of items. One is not quite the bylaws, but I took a look at the plan for our next meeting on October 23rd, and that's Rosh Hashanah.
Okay.
So whatever other date is convenient other than Yom Kippur. And I'm sure Lloyd can deal with that. But I just wanted to mention it yesterday. We're considering a couple of things in the bylaws. In order to improve efficiency, currently we have a chair of our Metro Access Subcommittee and a chair of our Bus Rail Subcommittee, and when we have three vice chairs of the full AAC. And one of the suggestions that has been made is that the chair of the Bus Rail Committee and the chair of the Metro Access Committee be the vice chairs of the AAC. That way, when you meet with leadership, you'll actually be meeting with leadership, which are the people that are handling most of the day-to-day work. That hasn't been approved yet by the full committee, but it's one of the things that's currently being discussed as a bylaw change to just give us efficiency. I can assure you the chairs of those two subcommittees are perfectly capable of chairing the full committee meeting, and they're right down in the trenches doing the work that needs to be done. So giving up my position as first vice chair, and Tappan will also, if that gets approved and that comes through, but it's something you'll have to look at. But that's the rationale behind it, is to get working vice chairs in the position. Well, I'll continue chair workforces and working groups, and yeah, I'll still do the things that I do without a title. Got a portfolio. The other thing that I was going to suggest for future meetings, at some point, Patrick will be retiring as chair of the committee.
One day.
And the tradition of...
Yeah.
No. But at some point, I think for these meetings, it might be good to include the immediate past chair of the committee along with the current chair of the committee when that happens. I'm not predicting anything for the next set of elections. One of the things that we had on our bylaws before we started reporting to the board was because our chair and vice chair terms are 2 years, that if the second year of the term actually came after your regular term on the committee had expired, we permitted you to stay on for the completion of your term, and then you would leave. And that's something that is different from the way the RAC works. It's different from the way the appointments currently work. But if we don't have that in, you run into a problem since the terms are for 3 years. And probably someone wouldn't be appointed to be chair of the committee until they had served 1 or 2 years on the committee, and then they'd have 1 year left in their term. And so we wanted to throw that out for you to think about and discuss as a way that we could, in fact, let somebody complete their two-year term. We haven't had that problem yet because both Patrick and I were in the middle of our terms when we took the positions, and the same with Tappan. But it's something that would limit the number of people that could actually serve as chair of the committee at some point.
One of the things that we actually did was put a term limit on the role of chair, so I don't think you'll have another chair for 20 years like I did. But I think that a couple of things that Phil said I think are important, particularly the idea of leadership. Having people that are doing the day-to-day work on the bus, rail, metro access subcommittees means you've got leaders that really have proven themselves. So I think that's important. And not only do they manage the subcommittees, the bus, rail, and metro access, but there are working groups off of those subcommittees that are reporting up through the subcommittees so that we have that kind of structure. I did say, and I haven't looked at it because I missed a meeting or two on the bylaws, but we did talk about also having the ability to have other individuals be able to give information to these task force and working groups so that you would have, you could expand the expertise of those working groups and task force that would feed then into the subcommittee so that we basically aren't going to burn our people out, so that you don't have the same 10 people, let's say, doing all the work on a committee of 21. What we found is that particularly in the lighting area, and we may expand it to also to the bus stop, is that we have a group of visually impaired, low vision visually impaired folks that have done the bulk of the work. Well, they should have the ability to work within the confines of a working group task force. I think that's kind of new. We didn't have that the last time we went through. Something that we're going to try to push for, you may see, but that's kind of the rationale behind it. I think we end up with, how many, six meetings or something, six or eight, six or seven a month. So you can tend to burn some people out. We don't want to do that.
Yeah, what we're doing right now, those working groups will be chaired by a member of the committee, but other members of it. Regina Lee, who just rotated off, still wants to stay very active with the bus stop group, and that's a blessing to have that. And so that's what we would like to do. But what we have been doing recently is for the hour following the end of bus rail and following metro access, that's when the working groups have been meeting, so that physically we're face-to-face. Other than that, we do a lot of our work by phone conference and by email. And that's one of the things that, again, people that you've appointed, new members of the board, are email literate and very active, and that's very important for us to get our work done. Mm-hmm. Now, what would you like us to do?
Yeah. So I would also say that, going into 2015, I would say that I think we did well in 2014. I think we've met a lot of the goals that we want to meet. As far as the various projects that we look at, I think that we just want to maintain the same level of success that we've seen over the last 6 to 9 months. I think that's good. So 2015, I know that one of the things we talked about last time after the resolution was getting that task force or that group put together so that we could start to look at
the human services piece,
and also the within the metro access, what the core issues are, and I'm not using the word I want to use, but what the core issues are and how we can improve that regionally. So that's something that we're very interested in. As a matter of fact, if I would say that if Phil is not a vice chair, I almost said my vice chair, that's presumptuous, that, and I was still chair, I would like to be able to have Phil coordinate those activities from the committee side so that we would have an effective effective partnership with the other entities within DC. And I see something like that as a project that is going to take, I think we said, what, 2 years at least, but you're getting down into the core issues. And so I think that's really critical, and we want to be able to be available and have the right resources so that we can do our part.
Mr. Chairman, I do believe that Mr. Levain, and I'm looking at Mr. Kent, I don't know if he has a time, but I thought sometime in the fall that he was to start looking at organizing this from the TPP side.
It's going to be in two parts.
Yes.
We're having our first organizing meetings in August to put together a bus stop workshop from all the jurisdictions to talk about that issue. And as you know, we have an update for you at the October Customer Service Committee to tell you how that's been going, which it's been going well. It's materially better since the last time we discussed this. So we'll have some good information for you there. But really what the workshop is intended to do is to make sure that on an ongoing basis that the data that we have is reliable, that it's being shared, and that it's being connected to the customers really being able to make use of that data. Because it's one thing for us to know which stops are accessible and which are not, but we really want the public to be able to see that. So even beyond getting an accurate count of the stops that still need fixing is the making of that information available to the end user to say, I'd like to travel somewhere today and I can go find out if the stop that's nearest me is going to be accessible. So all of those things are kind of in the works. The other activity that we have planned with COG that came out of the board resolution is really the discussion of regional coordination and the idea that Metro cannot be the sole provider of specialized transportation in the region. And we envision that to happen early in the new year. It's going to take some time to convene it because one of the things that COG has said to us is that if we really want that discussion to be of the kind that our board has said that it needs to be, then we have to have people coming to to that meeting who are going to be decision makers and who are going to be able to have some input and some influence over the financial side of it, really as well as the policy side. So there's a lot of planning that's going to go into that, and actually, if there is any further guidance that the board would like us to have in putting that together, we would certainly welcome that because we want to make sure that we deliver what you had in mind. But we do feel, just from our initial discussions with COG, that that there is a need for federal participation because this is a national issue and because there are federal grant programs and other funding sources that could be brought to bear to work on this issue, as well as regional decision makers who can have the same kind of influence in their respective areas and really try at all levels to prompt more of a discussion between human services and the transportation sectors. So that's a heavy lift. Chuck Bean is all on board and happy to lead the discussion. I mean, everybody is, at COG sees the relevance, wants to help. But in planning an event like that, we really do have to be very specific about who participates and also to kind of define early on what's the product. What do we want them to come out of that discussion with, whether it's some kind of a resolution or some kind of action plan. And, of course, we owe you a report after it's over in June to tell you really what we've accomplished. And I believe the resolution said that we would be implementing some specific actions by the end of calendar year 15.
I think that those two discussions, the bus stops and the discussion around the regional responsibility for paratransit, those are an enormous amount of work. And I think that it's one of the most important things that we can be doing. I think the board's discussion about it evidenced that. I think the regular checking in as we go forward on that, I think is critically important. You know, and I appreciate you making that front and center today. We need to make sure that it stays high on the priority list of the board. And your summary today reflects that it's got the appropriate level of visibility there. The only thing that I would add, and not as a work project, but is that we are celebrating the opening of the Silver Line. It will have a dynamic impact on transit within the region. We a lot of anticipated, planned, and awaited trend impacts, some that are more challenging, which are real. What I think it's going to be important for us to do is to also be sensitive to what impact it may have on paratransit travel, that either intended, unintended, or dynamic shifts, enhancements, or complexities. I mean, what is the impact of the Silver Line opening going to have on how paratransit functions within our system? And again, it's not to raise it as a work project, mm-hmm. but certainly how do we make sure that we are being sensitive to what happens in this change in transit patterns?
We've already requested that we look at any of the bus route changes and how they're going to affect accessibility and how they go. When we looked at the station, one of the things that was obvious was the distances that people have to travel. And for the motorized wheelchair people, that's not an issue, but for vision impaired people and people on crutches like me, that may be an issue. And the other thing is the clustering of the elevators in the middle of the platform with only two escalators, one at either end, and no way to tell which is going up and which is going down, because you can't see the red light or the green light or the sign. And it was one of the suggestions that we had made, was that something visible may be in the middle of the platform pointing to which one is going up and which one is going down. Because it is a long way from one, it's an eight-car train. It's a long way from one end to the other.
Having the ability to get mobility training within those new stations, sort of following up what Phil just said. Oh, I'm sorry, my mic's, jeez, that wasn't good. Following up what Phil said, getting mobility training within those stations, I think, is going to be key, because that was a different construct than what we had done before. And I don't know this. I know that we're getting, I think, an update on where they are with respect to an internal description of the stations for visually impaired. Mm-hmm. Christian, you remember that?
You're talking about the Columbia Lighthouse project.
Right, and they're actually coming to a meeting that I'm involved in August. But I hadn't thought, but do you think it would be an interesting idea to maybe have them go out, and if those stations are similar in construct, maybe do one of those stations?
Well, sure. You know, if I could just go up to 30,000 feet for a minute. One of the reasons why we established a work plan for the AAC is because of this, because of all the ideas that just come pouring out that we want to talk about. And sometimes they have to be done in sequence. The Click and Go project that Patrick is talking about is basically kind of like taped instructions on audio to help you navigate a station. And right now it's a pilot, and they're starting with Gallery Place and L'Enfant in particular stations where there's a lot of activity. You know, the transfer areas where you would need that extra assistance. Obviously, it's very much widely anticipated that we finish this pilot, and then of course from there, I mean, eventually we're going to want to have that for all the stations. We could certainly put the Silver Line ones as next in line for them to build something. So that's not really too much of a problem. But we're going to be getting an update from them very soon on that project. That's really exciting. On the impact of the Silver Line on paratransit and how we do business, you know, the interesting thing is it's going to have kind of a dual impact, because on the one hand, what Phil is saying about how the station design is a little different, certainly when people are travel trained, we do a consultation and ask them where they typically go. So if they say that they're going to be traveling using the Silver Line stations, then we're going to provide customized travel training for them. And of course, the the escalator piece that you mentioned would be one of the nuances that we would teach. But the other piece, though, that's interesting is that it now also creates the opportunity where we were providing 100% paratransit service in that area from end to end. Some customers may elect to be taken to those Silver Line stations, and that's the extent of their paratransit trip, and they do multimodal, and they get taken from their home to a Silver Line station and complete the rest of their trip on rail or bus. And that's something that we're definitely going to promote and encourage. But that all the more points to why we have to be very clear on how to make the most effective use of those stations.
One of the things that I wanted to bring up that I observed this morning, and it's somewhat off point, but relevant to the mobility. This morning, as I was coming in, I changed at the L'Enfant Plaza station, come up to the platform to catch the yellow and green lines as they come out toward Gallery. And the trains were full, which is great, but people disembarked, and we start to get on, but literally before people, as soon as people start to get on, doors closing, and so people with fluid mobility had difficult time, had just begun to get on, and certainly anyone who had any impairment at all had no shot at getting onto the train. Mm-hmm. And so my thoughts around training are what's the training for operators? Now, they've got a lot of responsibilities in moving that train, but something in that process didn't work well at all. And
that's your dwell time issue.
Yeah.
And it's also the courtesy of people getting off the train. I run into that all the time, that people say, oh, we're on our stop. Let's just sort of not dance off.
This had rapid onboarding and people coming off, but there simply wasn't enough time, period.
One of the things that I've done with that is, and I'm not sure whether this is information is correct, but I think it would be important to know. There are times when a door opens up and I can't tell if I'm at the door or not because some entrances are light and some are dark. So I don't rush. But if I miss a particular train because that door closed, what I would like to be able to know is that if I stand there for the next train, which might be 5 minutes or 3 minutes or something, that I'm at least lined up with that door. I'm not sure, and I was told the other day that I would be, but I'm just not quite sure if that's the case.
They have to stop at the mushroom light at the end of the platform. The operating rule is they have to bring it and the train to the exact same spot.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that okay, good. That's good to know. And from a mobility, yeah.
You're 99% because I know the spots.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, we had suggested.
As long as the train has the same number of cars on it.
Right. Well, no, six or eight.
The one thing that could go
wrong, oh, yeah.
If you're standing by car 7 or 8.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, that's true. But you know, that's a good.
Right, but that was an early suggestion we had made because in San Francisco, BART actually has the boxes on the platform, so you know where the doors are going to be. And that's a problem during rush hour because then people might all huddle about that. But they're very consistent. I know my grid where I can stand because I always get to the middle door on the third car because that opens up right by the elevator when I get out. But, yeah, they're very consistent, and particularly since I guess it was last year, because of the unfortunate suicides, it was made very clear that the first car is going to stop at that point at the end of the platform. And when that happened, they now are spot on every town that time. That really does work.
Could I go back to a question? Christian, I'm going to ask you a question we didn't even talk about, so I know you're going to like this. With the resolution piece and going back and trying to find out what the core issues are as far as metro access. Has this been done by any other transit agency in the United States? I'm just wondering if we could look at best practices as far as some of the research, Christian, that we're doing and I never thought of that.
Danger of moving all over again.
What's that?
I know.
Is that something, I assume that's something that you've already thought about, right?
Well, yes.
There you go.
And I mean, of course, you know, I you know, I was just sitting here realizing, you know, this is my 10th year at Metro. And I'm very, well, it was nine in June, so I'm now in my 10th year. So I'm managing to hold on for dear life. I remember not long after I first came here, and Mrs. Hudgens was part of the ad hoc committee that the board formed, because at that time we had just started a new contract, and the first few months of it were, and you were on that committee, Patrick. That we had COG come over, we had them do an independent study, and I remember sitting at the table and the board members obviously not very happy with the startup not going the way that it was supposed to, and they asked at the time, well, what information is there in the industry on paratransit? Are we reinventing the wheel? What have we done? And between that time, which was 2006, and now, Metro Access has probably been studied by more entities than the rail system and the other aspects of this agency. What I'm happy to say is that we've come so far that actually the other transit agencies are coming to Metro to ask about best practices. They're calling us all the time about travel training. I mean, we won the Innovation Award from APTA in 2012, so they want to know about how we did travel training. We successfully implemented the new business model last year. A lot of agencies are calling and saying, well, you know, that's intriguing. How did you do that? We participated in peer reviews. But the genre of comparison that we're talking about for the long-term sustainability study that was mentioned in the board resolution has to do with regional coordination, has to do with sharing other resources that provide both specialized transportation and fixed route transit to people with disabilities. So there is a lot of information out there for other parts of the country that have done that. I mean, we just actually just had a collaboration with King County Metro in Seattle. You know, we've done some extensive work with New Jersey Transit. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania has one of the older systems that had this type of transportation long before the ADA was even there. But what we find is that it's often very much dependent on the way that these services evolved in your area. So if you were in Pittsburgh and they had specialized transportation in the 70s, by the time the ADA came around, it wasn't that difficult for them to adapt to it. Whereas here in Washington, when the ADA was adopted, Metro had to say, wow, we've got to create a paratransit system. We've got to find people to hire it and import the expertise and almost start really from square one. So even when we compare notes with other parts of the country, their situations can differ from ours. So what we end up having to do is kind of taking the best that we can from each that we could apply here. One of the disadvantages that we have with all the multiple jurisdictions is that everybody kind of has their own plan and their own idea about how they want to deploy service. And the largest part of this region that uses Metro Access service is certainly in Maryland and certainly in Prince George's County. And we've already seen so far just the comparison between Montgomery and Prince George, how there is a noticeable difference in the dependency on paratransit where Montgomery has ride-on and has other fixed route alternatives and other services that people can make use of as they do in Virginia and as they do in the district. So, you know, kind of the long-term approach to this, to answer your question, Patrick, is that we have, when we convene the region and have this discussion, we have to make sure that the rest of the region understands that if they would provide these other alternatives, they wouldn't have to pay so much money into the paratransit bucket. And to see the relationships, Mr. Downs has said many times, like between the accessible bus stops, if people could get to your bus system, then that's another huge impact on the dependence on paratransit. So when we do our report for the board, it's going to include whatever data that we could pull from studies around the country, as well as the research that we're going to be doing here to kind of augment what's already been done in those areas.
So did
add to that. Alvin and I, a couple other board members, were at the APTA board members conference this weekend. There was a lengthy session on accessibility and particularly on the encouragement of use of fixed route and the strategies for doing that. The Transit Cooperative Research Program has rolled out a report, brand new, and this was the presentation of that. Mm-hmm. And it is full of references to what Metro has done and where it could go. But there was very good discussion, particularly on the issue of bus stops, to make it the point that this is a broader responsibility. If we can make that work, we can make lots of other things work. But it's a good reference document, and a lot of people are, as Christian said, looking at what we're doing and saying, we'd like to emulate that.
You know, one of the things that I learned at our last Metro Access meeting, when Christian presented the pilot projects with DC and Montgomery County, I asked the question, well, who's paying for it? And he said, well, it's actually coming out of the money they're saving by their contribution. So, I mean, that was the classic.
And I made the point in the discussion this weekend about bus stops that fixing a bus stop, if you can get one person to use the fixed route for a year, you have paid for.
That's right.
Yes.
You sure have. Well, yeah. Maybe two. Well, maybe yeah. Two stops.
I think that's a very important point. I was about to note that the Disability Services Board from Fairfax County was very critical to us in working on the Silver Line for a lot of the improvements that were made. Yeah. The simple piece of inside the garage, there is a disability rescue spot. We do have the evaluation of the elevators in which we need to have that longer dwell time in the elevators that I think Disability Services ADA kind of requires. Mm-hmm. That is, you need to have a longer time, A, to get in the elevators, or B, to get into the doorways of the car. Mm-hmm. And so they were very helpful, and I think they will continue to be. But also with our transportation committee, we have noted the bus stop issue has to rise to a higher level on our priority in transportation infrastructure improvement, because that's where the saving comes to us in terms of while we might not do as much as others do, we still do.
Yeah, on the Silver Line, I also report a couple of weekends ago, I went out to the emergency drill. Mm-hmm. One of the features of that drill was some volunteers in wheelchairs or visually impaired who went 2.5 miles out on the track and were brought back in so
that they could.
The first responders had a real hands-on experience of how to make that work.
So. I'm glad you mentioned
that. They were AAC members.
Because that's one of my pet projects. Remember, we had 19 of the 20 things we requested for the 7,000 car. And the one we didn't get was to have the wheelchair spots at the ends of the cars instead of the middle. And that's exactly why I wanted it at the ends, not we. Because all the signs state, leave bulky equipment in place. That's a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And so they will be in place at the center doors where everyone is evacuating. And they will become handrails. They will be walked over and they will impede egress. And that's a safety issue. And it came up again at the Silver Line. And the other thing on a positive note for the regular cars, on the 5,000, 6,000 series, the driver's booth is at the ends of the cars. So the driver's booth is on one side. There's a set of benches on the other side, and there's a wonderful little hallway in between where the wheelchairs can park. And I know when I travel with Tappan or with Mike Brownell, that's where they park. So they're not used as handrails, and they're not trampled. They also, during rush hour, have an option of knowing about where the train's going to stop. They sit between two cars, and they have a choice of one or the other at the end. Whereas if they're shooting for a middle door, one, they have to go over, everybody's at the middle door, and there's only one car they can get in or not get in. And so once again, I will bring up my plea to ask the engineers to look again about the possibility of putting those wheelchair slots at the end and keeping regular benches in the middle, and the priority seating in the middle, so there'll be four in the middle two priority and two regular benches and the wheelchair slots at the end, so they have a choice of two cars. They have the parking spot between the driver and the other benches. And also, in an emergency, they won't be used as a fixture.
We have a meeting that we have to go to next week. Our general counsel, and she has to be on conference call by 3 with two attorneys general. But I wanted to make a suggestion. At the rate that we're making bus stops accessible, bus stop accessibility will be an issue in this region for at least 15 years. It needs to be a regular, you hope you can plan for a regular annual work item from the AAC that assesses the year's progress and lessons learned for the year, that gets us your input as part of the regional accountability. We're all responsible here. We've got bus stops that are not on metro bus routes that are not accessible as well as on. So your input, your critique, your suggestions needs to be part of an annual process that we plan for as well through Catherine's committee. And coming up in October is that report. Well, we don't normally do it. I think it would make sense to have the committee be able to have the AAC participate in that committee session about the presentation on bus stops. I know that I think the AAC would appreciate the ability to be part of that committee conversation.
That's actually on our bus rail work plan for this year. Last year, we had representatives from all of the jurisdictions come in and present their accessibility plans, and on our work plan for this year is to have them come back and tell us what they actually did.
And that's how we discovered the disparity in the data, because some of what they originally told us wasn't actually what
it was.
An
understatement.
But what we're going to do, though, you had assigned us to give an annual report, so we're going to provide it.
Right.
Oh, right. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, I've done that before. I mean, Phil was with me once before when we had a financial issue that we presented. Mr. Acosta had us come up. But we will do that for you in October. But the annual report, we talked with Andrea Burnside and assumed you'd want us to roll that into your KPI that on the subject.
I think it's a special committee. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, this is one of the parts of mm-hmm. service. Mm-hmm. The other suggestion that I would make is that because this is going to be a decade and a half effort, I think it's important to think about the technology that might be helpful, and I don't know what the answer is. Every bus stop in this region has a unique bus stop identifier, so we're there. Mm-hmm. We have GIS network of those that would allow individuals to access information on a particular bus stop in their neighborhood to be able to online. Mm-hmm. This would help people be able to make a judgment about whether or not use that stop, or if there are other bus stops accessible within reasonable distance of their home. There isn't a system like that that would provide real-time online information about accessibility mm-hmm. bus stops. And I think it would be helpful if you could think through, as a committee, what that system might do, how it might be structured, because we need something that helps people navigate for this extended period of time where we go through getting all of the bus stops accessible. Mm-hmm. The last thing that I would suggest, and I've made this suggestion to the general manager, but I still saw it twice today. some way of having advance notice after you get off the train or before you enter the station that all of the escalators at one level in the station are in walk mode.
You came through to just Sherry this morning, too.
I did last, yes.
The paper sign, yeah.
And it drives me crazy because people who are still mainlining on the system but have some limited mobility, people on...
Don't take them off because of that.
Or,
I agree.
Yes, and they need information so that they can find an elevator and not get up. They have to turn around and come back.
Well, Monday for our meeting, I got off the train, and the big sign said, the street elevators are out of service.
At Judiciary.
But I then went up the escalator and had to walk up to the street. But then Bill Statterman showed up and said, there's nothing wrong with the elevators. I came up. So that sign was incorrect. The street elevators were working.
Escalator wasn't working when I came up.
Well, it was. I took the elevator up today, but on Monday, Bill Satterman and I had that experience. I walked up to the street because I believed the sign that the elevators were out, when in fact the elevators were not out. They were working. Yeah, the escalator was out. No, the escalator is out.
The sign said escalator was out.
Well,
your constituents are the ones who were most directly impacted by our inability to transmit timely information about escalators and elevators within a station area, and we need to do a much better job of it.
And like many other things, it would be a good thing for everybody.
Well, I was about to say one of the best things that we all got ourselves informed about how important all of this was when we had the awareness piece, and we traveled together. The ability to travel together and actually realize, gee whiz, I can't get over to the other side of the platform to turn around and go back, so I have to go completely out of a station, find myself backtracking to go. And I think that constant awareness of those of us who make the policies and manage the system really is the enforcement part of that. You could say it over and over,
right,
but it really hits
it's
start
a monthly event
it.
At the bus rail committee.
Right.
elevators are, and escalators are.
I think it is a good piece.
Right.
Most of the cases when all the escalators are out, there's no
Mr. Downs, I was just going to share with you that technology that you spoke of about customers learning about the accessibility of a stop is something that we're building right now. So the AAC is going to be informing us as we go, as we have something to show them. Yes. So that's something that we're going to do. But the escalator piece, I'm glad you mentioned it, because I'll make sure we put it on our work plan, too. So. Thank you for that.
And just a quick reminder, this Saturday, in addition to the Silver Line, it is the ADA anniversary. We will remind you on Saturday.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you.